This is another episode of Evolutionary.org. Up my ass raw. This is your host, Steve Smee. I'm with the Mason, as usual. We are from the Evolutionary.org headquarters. And tonight we have a really cool show. We have some interesting topics ahead. So let's start off first with a relationship question to start off the show real quick. And here's a question that was submitted. He sent a long message to me, but I'm going to condense it as much as I can. And he wants to know, he's saying, "Dear Steve and Matt, my wife came to me the other day with a letter from our homeowners association saying that we owe $1,200. I was very upset about this because I let her handle some of the bills and I handle some of the bills." Well, in this case, what happened was it turns out she had been paying the HOA bill late and they had been docking us $25 every month. I'm a little concerned because, we just got married. I'm a little concerned that she doesn't know how to manage money. And I'm worried that this type of thing is going to continue to happen. So we end up having to pay $900 in late fees plus lawyer fees to the HOA, and that's $1,200 that we can't get back. So should I be concerned, and how should I handle the finances from now on? Should I just handle everything, or should I let her do it? So Matt, you're married. I think we touched on something like this before, but this is a little more specific. So I mean, I know you probably have like a home and a mortgage, and you have to pay taxes. You guys pay property taxes in Canada, right?
Yeah.
And you probably pay like what do you guys pay usually in property taxes? Is it more in the United States or?
So where I used to live in Western New York and where I live now in Southern Ontario, my taxes in Canada are about half of what I paid in the States. But my house costs probably four times what it did there for the same type of house. So it's all relative, right? It's really hard to compare the two because
Yeah. So,
taxes go to all different
but
things.
you guys have HOAs up there too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, in this case situation, what do you recommend for this guy here? This is a common thing. Like, in my experience, because I've lived with people, I've always handled the finances because the girl, for some reason, doesn't want to deal with it. And because I'm so much better with dealing with finances, so I've always handled it. So, do you think that they should kind of one person handle the finances, or they kind of? It seems like she's handling some stuff, but she's fucking it up. So, do you think that he should handle it? Like, what's the best way to handle that?
I think like his question, should he be concerned? Yeah, you want to be concerned because you don't want to be pissing money down the drain for no reason. But there's easy fixes to things like this. Like in my house, my wife does all the finances herself. And has she missed stuff in the past? Sure, it's happened here and there, but you can't have it happen on a regular basis. But what you can do is you want to set up as many of your bills as possible. To automatically come out of your account. Then you don't even have to think about it, right? It's gonna come out every month or whenever it's supposed to happen. My mortgage, for example, I pay weekly now because it's, you pay it off quicker, so it just comes out of my bank every week. And my bank pays my taxes for me, so that comes right out in the same payment. So it's really easy. What you could also do if it's something where you're not able to do that is set a reminder in your phone. Because, personally, my memory is terrible. I forget shit all the time. This year is the first time ever that I've done this, but I was home. I was on the phone with my wife, and talking to her distracted me. Got off the phone with her, and the next time I looked down at my phone or at the clock, I was late picking up my kids from the bus. So I felt like a terrible father, terrible person, right? It was the worst feeling ever, but it happens. So what did I do? I have an alarm that literally goes off on my phone Monday to Friday at 3:20 every single day, just in case I get distracted, whatever, you know, to prevent myself from forgetting. So, you know, definitely it's worth a talk, and you can do it without getting yourself in shit too. You don't have to make her feel bad, like, oh, you know, you forgot to pay the bill, maybe I should do it. You can ask her, hey, you know, like, you're busy, you got a lot going on. You want me to take over some of this to take the load off your shoulders? You know, you can try to get to the same goal, but word it a different way, and, you know, to get to the same place. It's kind of, if you can think like a salesman for a minute, you know, you want to get to one goal, but there's multiple ways to get there. So I don't think you necessarily need to take it over from one thing and be that way. I'd give her a chance, talk to her, and see if you can implement one of those other tactics.
I think consolidating is very important, your accounts. And I also think using bill pay is really good, because when you use online bill pay and something like that happens, you can go back and track when the bill was actually delivered, you know, so they can't say, oh, it's late. So doing the bill pay, and also the bank has your back. Like, so if they're claiming, oh, we got this late, or they're claiming they never got a payment, whatever, all you got to do is just call up the bank and tell them what happened, and the bank will actually go back and fix it. And a lot of times your bank, they'll refund you if there was a late fee, because it would, if it's on them, like if they didn't get the payment to them on time, they'll usually like call them on three-way and try to figure out what the heck happened and try to resolve it. You see? So that's a good, safe way, and everything's tracked when you do bill pay. So the person you're sending the bill to can't say they didn't get it. They can't say they got it late. They can't charge you late fees, because everything is there in black and white. So I mean, I've had something happen to me before with a homeowner's insurance. I had a homeowner's insurance company exclaim, oh, we never got your payment. We never got your payment. I actually went on my bank online, and I printed out the copy of the check, which is on my statement online. Printed it out, and I took it to the insurance place, and I told the lady, I'm like, look, what is this? Is this not you? It's made out to you. My policy number is on the check. It's the amount, blah, blah, and you're claiming you didn't get it. And then suddenly she like changed. She's like, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we got you. So that's evidence. So you really have to keep a good record of your shit. And some people aren't capable of that. So if she's not capable of doing it, then maybe you need to handle it. So if both of you suck at it, then you're going to have big problems, you know, because some people are just incapable of being organized. So I'm a very logical thinker. I'm a very organized person. So for me, it helps to just consolidate my bank accounts, and I make my payments through a particular bank account, through bill pay. Everything is logged. Everything is a record of everything. They can't claim they never got it, because everything is recorded.
Yeah, and if they're newly married too, like Steve said, I mean, it takes time to get into your routine. But I mean, after a little while, you're going to be paying the same shit every month for a long time unless you make changes. You know, it's nothing's going to change. So you're better off to figure it out. One of the dumbest things you can do is mess up your finances and mess up your credit for no reason at all. All you got to do is pay your stuff on time. You know, don't overspend. Don't get yourself into a bad situation. It just compounds and people get, you know, buried. They get in so much trouble. It's the easiest thing to prevent if you're just careful with what you do. So make sure you pay your shit on time. And it is important. So yeah, definitely. If, you know, if you talk to her and it's something where she's not going to figure it out, you got to do it, because it's both of your futures at stake, right? You got to make sure you have your money, and you know, you can't just be blowing $1,200 all the time for no reason. So yeah, you got to sort it out.
I mean, if you're married and that person has problems with like credit and they're getting shit sent to collections, doesn't that affect you? Because you're married, you know, and you're both, it's like a partnership. So if they're they've got financial issues, they've got debt, they've got problems, it's going to come on you too. It's going to fuck you up. So it's like, would you marry someone who had those types of issues?
Yeah, you got to be careful if you want to, you know, buy a house together or things like that. You know, what happens if one of your credit's terrible? Then you're trying to buy a house in one person's name with one income instead of two. It gets really tricky. So yeah, you really got to be careful. And I mean, that's something you should probably, you know about beforehand, obviously. And, you know, you really would have to work together with that person to fix it, because you don't want to, you know, assume somebody's financial problems when they're not willing to fix it and make it better and everything else. It's one thing if they were in trouble years ago and they're, you know, they're working to get out of it. But, you know, if they're in collections and they don't know how to, you know, be a grown up, that's a huge, huge red flag. I mean, when you're getting married, what are you looking forward to, right? You're going to probably buy a house. You're going to think about having kids, that kind of thing. You're planning your future. And if you got all those problems with money, you're not going to have much of a future. So you got to sort that stuff out beforehand.
Yeah, it sounds really scary. It makes me want to just stay single when I hear stories like this. So, well, I mean, it works both ways. A lot of times the guys are the fuck ups. Especially, it seems like the younger male, you hear these stories of guys that jump from bed to bed, you know? They don't even have their own house or their own car or anything. They just, you know, they sleep in the bed of a girl and then she dumps them. And then he, a few days later, he, after couch crashing at his friend, he goes finds another girl and stays in her bed. So it's, you hear your stories both ways, but God, I mean, come on, people, you got to get your shit together. Companies actually, they check credit these days. They'll check your credit score before they hire you because they want to know, is this person responsible? So it's not just buying a house, it's everything. So that can definitely affect your marriage. If she can't get a job because her credit sucks, you know, then no one wants to hire her, then that can affect you later on. So just be careful, yeah. So our next topic is fix my cycle, brah. And this one, he's saying he just started taking Trenbolone Ace, 100 milliliters, with test 250 milliliters. I'm not really sure. I think he means milligrams, not milliliters. He says, I've been taking them for 3 weeks already, one shot a week, one cc a piece, but not getting much results. Any help? And I just started taking Arimidex since I saw the video that I'm supposed to take it even if I don't have symptoms. Also, any blood work that I should take after my cycle, please let me know. Thanks, bro. So, you know, this one is a perfect example of someone who did not do any homework. With all the information available out there, all the free information we have available, it just boggles the mind that people still have no fucking clue what they're doing. So in this situation, he obviously means milligrams. He's taking 100 milligrams of Tren Ace once a week, and he's taking test. He didn't say what kind of test. 250 milligrams once a week, and he's, after 3 weeks, he's not getting any results. So first off, with Tren Ace, you're not supposed to inject it once a week. You're supposed to inject it once every other day, maybe once every third day. You can get away with it at the worst. And then test, you, if you're using a long ester test, 250 milligrams a week, that's fine with Tren. If you're just running the test alone, 250 milligrams a week would be nothing. That would be just a little bit above a TRT dose. So it wouldn't even be worth it to shut yourself down. So I don't have a problem with the test dose. The Tren dose, 100 milligrams a week, is not very much. I would go 200 milligrams a week on that. So, and you want to be injecting more often. So that's the first issue right there. Also, he's not getting much results. People who don't get results from steroids, they usually are the guys that either they have bunk steroids or they're the guys that don't really understand like how to work out, how to diet. They don't know what to expect because they don't have any experience enough in the gym. So it's like, how do they know? So, I mean, they can bench like 60 or 70 pounds. They're like one of those guys who benches like 60, 70 pounds in the gym and they hop on steroids. Well, I mean, what do you expect to gain? You're not even a weightlifter. You're just some weekend warrior. So, I mean, this is all fucked up. Matt, I'll let you chime in on this.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad because it's like, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I don't think he really knows anything about, you know, anything to do with steroids, fitness, probably dieting. And he's probably young and just hasn't done the research yet. So, you know, unfortunately, he decided to start doing it and then ask afterwards. But I mean, being new like that and not knowing anything, I'm not sure how appealing injecting every other day is going to be. But with Tren Ace, that's really where you need to be. I mean, some people pin it every day. That's not something I would do, but you know, you really need to be doing every other day. So you're going to need 50 to 75 milligrams in that range every other day. Fine if you want to do the 250 test and inject it once per week. That's fine. I have no issue with that, assuming it's a long ester. 3 weeks in, no results. He's likely expecting that the steroids are going to make him this big superhero. We know that's not what happens. So that's probably the first mistake. You know, 3 weeks in, if you were running Tren Ace properly, like you're going to be definitely seeing results from that. A long ester after 3 weeks, it's not peaked yet, but you definitely have tests in your system. So, you know, the combination of the two, 3 weeks in, absolutely you should see results. The fact that he's injecting it the trend once per week is probably a big part of why, you know, nothing's stable. He's not really getting anything out of the trend. It's kind of in and out. It's real. Like if I had to recommend where to go from here, I'd probably just get off. I'd probably get off all the gear. I'd run a PCT. You still would have been shut down pretty good, you know, from being on 3 weeks. Plus you got to wait for the esters to clear from the test. So, you know, I'd run a PCT and I'd just take the time and learn, you know, learn about how these things work and learn how to properly run a cycle. Because if you continue to do this for, you know, 10, 12 weeks, it's just going to be, you know, worse and worse for recovery. And I don't think you're going to get really anything out of this cycle. I'd focus on, you know, your lifting, your training, being consistent, or your diet, your training, being consistent with both, and really put the time in, come on the forums and just read. Like there's literally thousands and thousands of articles on all of these compounds and how to run them together, and you know, ask any specific questions you have, but really need to get in and read, and I'd probably start over.
Yeah, my question is, why are you running Tren? Obviously, you don't know what the fuck you're doing, and this seems like it's your first cycle, and it seems like you have no experience weight training at all. So I don't understand why you're running Tren. It just boggles the mind. You know, it's another example of, you know, steroid guys giving steroids a bad name, because this is the type of guy who, you know, he's like one of these guys, you know, you see in the gym who you see them come in the gym like once or twice a week. They're weak. They don't know what they're doing. They just clown around the whole time. They're on their phone the whole time. And then they want to stick their ass with some steroids because their buddy or told them about it or something like that. Or they stumbled across some Reddit page or something. So, you know, this is another example of that, you know, and this is why, you know, these types of guys give responsible steroid users a bad name. So, dude, I mean, just bottom line is, you know, you don't know what the fuck you're doing, and you're not going to get anything from using steroids if you don't know what you're doing. So just you're wasting your time and you're fucking yourself up for no reason. Matt, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, I got a couple really good topics today. We're going to go a little different, and I'm not going to go by emails. I did get quite a few emails, but what I wanted to do for this podcast was go through a couple forum posts that I found. And the first one I wanted to talk about, and this will be our typical training segment, you know, fix my training bro. And this one actually is a little more on the endurance side, and it's going to be about shin splints. So the question came in this way. It said, is there anything I can supplement to alleviate shin splints? I'm suffering from serious shin splints and was wondering if there's anything I could take to help me with that. That would be amazing. So, you know, to answer the question directly, you know, do you need to take something? Sure, you could take some fish oil. Fish oil helps with inflammation. Is it going to make a difference that you're going to feel? No. The only other thing you can take would really be like, you know, anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil or Tylenol. But, you know, you don't want to be doing that. So really what I want to talk about then is how do we actually deal with shin splints? So I'll just get into that a little bit. Steve, I want to leave you to talk about pumps, because you know there is a big difference, and you know a lot about pumps and a lot about some steroids that can cause them, different things, how to deal with that. So then we can kind of cover both areas, because you know we don't really know what the guy's issue is for sure. I've had issues with these, both of them personally, so I can speak from a bit of experience, but shin splints, like they'll be extremely painful. For me, it was always running. Running would be the worst more than anything. So a few of the causes can be basically having a flat foot. So if you're running, if you don't have the right type of shoe, the arch of your foot will basically collapse down. And when you do that over and over and over again, that can cause it. That'll give you the pain. Just having a poor quality shoe altogether is a big deal. If you're going to be running, you really want to go and get a good pair, or you can even go into like a running room store and they'll fit you and help you, you know, make it fit to your actual foot. Another thing can be if you just go out and run, if you don't warm up beforehand and you don't stretch afterwards, that can lead to it. So that's something you really want to do. And I've said before, that's something I really value now as I've got older, is really the warm-ups and the stretching and all that. And one that people don't realize as much, I've mentioned this a few times, are you can have weak parts of your body that have nothing to do with your shins. So it can be weak ankles, hips, your core muscles, or that muscle right on the front of your leg that's opposite your calf. All of those muscles, if you have a weak spot, you know, I'm not saying it's not super strong. What I'm saying is it's very weak compared to the rest of your body. So you need to be balanced. So if you're, you know, you really need to train those muscles. I think for most people, it's probably that muscle on the front of the leg or the core. I think those are really places you want to, you know, focus on and really train. It's not something everybody does, but those will definitely help. So those are kind of like the first signs and little things you can do. Can you actually treat them? You know, that's kind of what the question was looking for, like a supplement or something to treat them. The answer is really no, other than medicating, like I said. It's rest. The best thing you can do is just rest. Don't run. You got to let it go. You got to let it heal. If it's just after it's happened, icing it will help. So you can ice basically for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes or so at a time and do that like every 3 or 4 hours. And within 2 days, 3 days maximum, that pain should be gone and you shouldn't have to like ice anymore. I've never had it go on for that long, but I, you know, from the research I was doing, that is fairly common. What you can also do, another one is, I kind of got into this, is use orthotics for your shoes. So those inserts that you can put in, they'll prevent the arch from going down. That really will, you know, save you from that if that's your issue. And besides painkillers. Really, you should be taking fish oil anyway because there's so many benefits to it. That does naturally help your body's anti-inflammatory response. So what you want to look for to know that you're healed, like I said, you really need to give it time, is the first thing, and this is one you don't really think of, is flexibility. So move your ankles around on both legs. Typically, it'll be one that'll be in a lot more pain than the other. If you have both, this isn't going to really help. But if it's one more than the other, really look at the flexibility. They should be the same. You should feel just as strong too. If you're weight training at all, you shouldn't notice a big difference in your legs. If you feel like your one leg is really weak, you're not healed yet. What you can also do is take your foot and your shin and kind of put it, basically just pick your leg up like you're going to cross your legs and push in gently on the spots where it was hurting when you're running. You shouldn't feel any pain. Okay, that's kind of the first step before you're going to try anything physical on your leg. Push in and see if there's pain. If there's not, try jogging. Do it very slowly just to get in. Don't do any sprinting right away, but push that off till way down the road. So jogging lightly, and then it, you know, you have to really slowly work your way up to sprints and jumping and anything like that you were going to do. The last thing I'll touch on quick with actual shin splints, this is something I had no idea, but so everybody heals differently. We've talked about this with steroids, with weightlifting. Our bodies, we're all different. We don't all respond to things the same way. There's nothing unusual about somebody taking 3 to 6 months to be fully healed from shin splints. So if you legitimately have that, if that is your injury, it can take a very, very, very long time. So if you're a week in and you're like, oh, it's not getting better, you know, maybe I'll just try to run. Don't. Keep that number in mind. 3 to 6 months. Think about how long that is. You know, if you've done serious damage, it could take that long. So I've said it again, I'll say it probably 100 more times. Listen to your body. If you feel pain, rest. When you start to feel better, go back into it gently.
Oh boy, I had fucking shin splints when I played soccer in high school. I had them. And again, when I was an endurance athlete in my mid to late 20s, I had them. So, you know, I've had to deal with them. The first time they happened, they were caused by improper fitted shoes when I was running. And that's something you need to do. The best way to cure shin splints is not to get them in the first place. And the way you cannot get them is proper fitting shoes. The like Matt was saying, get those orthos. You might have to go see a podiatrist, and he can take a look at your feet and see what the hell is going on. A lot of times, you're pronating when you run. You're heel striking. You're not distributing the striking evenly throughout the entire foot. So it's kind of radiating up the leg. So that bone that you feel in the front of your lower leg, if you go to the sides of it, it gets really, really inflamed when you run. So once you start getting those shin splints, it's a problem. And running through them may work for some people, but I'm telling you that in my experience, if you try to run through them, they're just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse till you're crippled. And then it's going to take a long time for them to heal. So if you start getting them, you need to re-examine your shoes right away. You need to run on soft surfaces, grass, and then also consider running barefoot. Because when you run barefoot, you can't cheat your stride. You won't heel strike when you run barefoot. That's why a lot of the African runners who run marathons and run long distances, they actually run barefoot. They don't use shoes. That's why. Because that's your natural striking. So those are your options. I really feel bad for anybody who gets shin splints, believe me, because I went through them. And the difference between shin splints and shin pumps, some people, a lot of meatheads don't understand the difference. Shin pumps are from basically that blood flowing into the muscle in your leg, and that kind of makes your muscle like a fucking balloon that feels like it's going to explode. Those are pumps. You'll get those from running Winstrol, D-Bowl, you know, Tren, any type of steroid that causes pumps, you're going to get those shin pumps if you try to run. I know when I'm running VAR, I'll get back pumps if I'm running. D-Bowl will give me really bad calf pumps. So, but a pump is not like shin splints. They're two totally different things. So you've got to understand the difference. The good news about the pumps is that the easy way to cure that is to just stop taking steroids and you won't get the pumps. And you can try lowering your dose of steroids and taking taurine. So N2Guard is a product that does have taurine, by the way. So that's an option for you. But the shin pumps are not a big deal, but the shin splints are a big fucking deal. So be very careful with those.
All right, so let's go into our next topic then. This is another really good one. We did get a lot of diet email questions this week, but I honestly have to put it to the side because there was one other question that came up, and I think it's really important to cover this because we get so much misinformation on it. So we're going to park the diet question for this week, and we're going to talk a little bit about CIRMs. So the question was very simple the way it came in, and it was titled, how long for CIRMs to work? Does anyone know how long Clomid and Novadex take to work? Would they be in my system 2 weeks? So the question came across a little odd. Initially, I wasn't sure. Is he asking how long do they take to work in your system, or how long do they take to get out of your system? I didn't know if maybe he was being tested or, you know, kind of what the actual question was. So, you know, a few of us went back and got some clarity from him. And basically he wanted to know how long they take to boost testosterone, LH, etc. He says, I'm taking 50 milligrams Clomid, 20 milligrams Nova per day, and was going to get blood's done in the second week. So this is why, after that response, I thought, you know what, we really got to answer the question for this guy. The half-life is 5 to 7 hours. So these things are in your system immediately. You know, anything you put in starts working immediately. Now, here's the thing. Sure, it's going to raise your testosterone levels, but it's not real. You know, this isn't your body producing testosterone. These are the CIRMs doing their job. If you stop taking them, your testosterone levels will go right back down where they were, right? So you really need to give your body a lot of time. So I think this guy potentially could have done himself a ton of damage, because if I'm understanding properly, I think he was going to take the CIRMs, go get blood work done in 2 weeks, see his testosterone levels higher and think he's recovered so he can start another cycle. And that is so far from what's going to, you know, what you can actually do. I'll let Steve explain a little bit how CIRMs work, because he's an expert on this. He's got videos out there that you guys can look up. On the evolutionary.org channel, articles and everything else, he could tell you how these things work really well. But I will tell you that what you need to do is, first of all, depending on what you ran, you don't just start CIRMs right away. You know, if you ran, say, testcipinate, you're going to probably take 2 weeks off after your last injection. You want esters to clear. You know, you're still going to have some after 2 weeks, but you want the bulk of it to get out before you start taking them. Then you're going to take the CIRMs. All they're going to do is make it, you know, your test levels will be up. You'll feel better than you would if you took nothing, you know, so it'll help you while in the background, your body is actually trying to recover, because your body has to recover, you know. So that's kind of the basic idea of what this guy needs to do. But getting blood work 2 weeks in, it makes no sense. it's completely artificial. It would be like, you know, let me take a 45-pound plate and let me go stand on the scale and see how much I weigh. Do I weigh that much? No, I don't. It's because I'm holding a weight when I'm on the scale. It's a completely artificial number. It's the same thing that's going on here. What you need to do, first of all, if you don't want to do anything, if you want to be lazy, just go with time on plus PCT is time off. You know, if you do 12-week cycle, 6-week PCT, take 18 weeks off, and then go at it again. Now, if you're not going to be lazy, ideally what you want to do, run your PCT, but don't get your blood work till about 4 weeks after, because that'll give you real numbers. Those SERMs will be out of your system, you know, and you'll be able to see, you know, is my testosterone levels recovered? Are they, you know, in the normal range where they were beforehand, relatively close? Where's my LH and FSH? If they're still close to zero, you know, if they're sitting at one, you're not recovered. You know, you need a lot more time. So that's when you want to get your blood work. And that's really what you want to look at. Not to mention all your health. So I guess, Steve, why don't you chime in? Let this guy know kind of how SERMs work and what they do, so he can understand that they're not going to just fix everything on their own.
So when you're running steroids, your pituitary glands shut down and they stop producing your LH, which stimulates your lytic cells into producing testosterone. So when you're coming off cycle, you want to use the SERMs, because the SERMs basically give you a soft landing. They're kind of like a bridge into your own body starting to produce testosterone on their own. But when you're using SERMs, they're not going to cure your issue. We see this all the time. We see guys who have HPTAs blown to bits because they abuse steroids. They'll start taking SERM, and then their testosterone levels will shoot up to 1,000, and then they'll be celebrating like, "Oh my God, I'm cured! I'm cured! I'm cured! I don't have low testosterone anymore. I don't have to be on TRT anymore." And they stop taking the SERM, and then guess what happens? Their testosterone levels crash back down to 200. So we see that all the time. So they're only working when they're in your system, and they're not androgenic. So you're gonna have nasty side effects. You'll probably have like nasty side effects. Like you'll feel like shit. You'll have no energy. Your mood will become shitty. You'll be a weepy bitch, and you know, hurt your libido and all that stuff, because they're actually anti-androgenic, and they also drop your IGF-1. So we use the SERMs when we're coming off of steroids, because it kind of gives us a soft landing, and it kind of allows our body to kind of readjust. Then when you stop taking the SERM, then your body needs to start recovering on its own, you see? So when you do run the SERM, what happens is the SERMs basically block estrogen from going back and cycling back into your pituitary glands. Now this causes, it's kind of a manipulation. It'll manipulate your pituitary glands to start producing lots of LH, which stimulates lytic cells and producing lots of testosterone. So that's the way it works. It's kind of like a feedback loop. So and then when you come off of the SERMs, your own body has to repair itself. That's the only way that you can truly recover, is your own body recovering, because you're not going to be on Clomid the rest of your life. You're not going to be on Novadex the rest of your life. So, I mean, that sums it up. And Matt put it perfectly. I can't really add anything to what Matt said earlier about, you know, when it happens. You really have to run blood work after your PCT to make sure you're recovered. You can't run blood work while all these drugs are in your system and think that that means you're recovered, because you're not. So, you know, it's that simple.
Yeah, Steve, did you get any questions this week?
So our last topic is going to be about fasting. And we've had a lot of threads come up about fasting, a lot of confusion about fasting. I decided to publish a book, and it's basically on Amazon. And if you click in my signature, it'll link you to that book. And Matt read a copy. It's called A No BS Fasting for Fat Burn. And it's going to teach you different fasting strategies. I kind of go over the history of fasting. I explain, you know, how fasting helps you from a health perspective. And there's a lot of things that it helps you with. So, Matt, you know, I gave you a copy of the book. What do you think about the book? What'd you learn in it?
You know what? I think the great thing about it is if somebody's looking into fasting and they don't really, you know, they don't really know if it's for them. They're just kind of interested, you know, because it is intriguing. You hear about fasting and you're like, you know, initially when you're new to it, you're like, what do you mean fasting? Like, I'm not going to eat. You know, it sounds kind of extreme. So when you actually get into it, it's very interesting. There's so many health benefits. What I learned that I had no idea was that there's so many different kinds of fasting. I always thought fasting was just you don't eat, you know, simple as that. It's not like that. There's a lot of different ways you can fast. So what I've done personally, and I know what Steve's done a lot of, is water fasting. To me, that's the best one for me and for my goals. It's very safe. It's something that I've gotten, you know, where it's very easy for me to do now compared to where I was when I started. I have no problems doing it for a few days, you know, no problems at all. But I didn't know that there's, you know, dry fasting, and that can be dangerous, but that's a thing. People can do that. There's water fasting with electrolytes, water fasting with, you know, additional non-caloric liquids and sweeteners. So like you can add different things. There's water fasting with caloric liquids, right? So where you're adding just little things that do have calories, you know, like lemon, you know, coconut water, low calorie green powders, things like that, where you're not, you know, fasting with zero calories, but it's very low calorie foods. And there's people even that will do water fasting with, you know, fruit and veggies. There's ways to do that. And I'm pretty sure that was discussed with Dr. Gary on a podcast. I want to say he did some type of fruit veggie fasting before, but that's the thing. There's so much to it, guys, that you got to get this and you got to read through it. You got to find out what's right for you. Even when you pick the type you want. So say you pick water fasting, that's the one you want to go to. Within that, you can do it different ways. You know, you can do a 24-hour fast. You can do, you know, and that's what I recommend for somebody getting started. You can do, you know, a short-term fast where, you know, it's going to be 2, 3, 4 days. You could do intermittent, prolonged. You can do a prolonged fast. I know Steve's dipped into the prolonged, which is, you know, 11 to 35 days. That's going to be when you're, you know, much more advanced and, you know, you really know what you're doing and you know what your goals are and how to get there and everything. But yeah, just the amount of information that's out there now and the amount of understanding it takes to really know how to do it right. That was the biggest thing that I learned from the book.
So I want to kind of get into some of the benefits of fasting again. We've touched on this before, but I kind of want to just simplify it a little bit. And then in the next podcast, we can kind of hit what Matt went through, the types of fasting, the lengths of fasting. We kind of look into those and discuss those. But people don't realize one of the biggest benefits of fasting is the destruction of cancer cells. And that's actually called autophagy. And what that means is that what happens is that cancer cannot survive without being fed. So if you're fasting, you're destroying those cancer cells in your body. So right now, there may be cancer in your body. Remember Dallas McCarver, after he died, they did an autopsy and they found out he had cancer, but he never knew about it. So we have tiny cancer cells developing in our body, and what happens is your immune system cannot fight that off. So when you fast, you're actually going to slow their growth and you're going to destroy them. So it's basically the process of cleaning out bad cell matter that has built up in our body. Another benefit, anti-aging. When you're fasting for over 3 days, you're actually killing off white blood cells in your body that are old. and you're creating brand new, fresh troops. So it'd be like replacing your 80, an army, a bunch of 70-year-olds with a bunch of young 20, 25-year-olds. So that's going to boost your body's immune system. Another one is going to be, that's why, like, when you're sick, you don't want to eat. You don't have an appetite because your body is smart. Your body doesn't want food. So your body is saying, don't feed me. And a lot of people think when they're sick, oh, you're supposed to eat chicken soup. You're supposed to, you know, eat a bunch of oranges. You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do that. No, your best thing you can do when you're sick is not eat at all. Because this way you give your body a chance to kind of recycle that old cell matter. And another reason it boosts your immune system is because 50% of the energy your body uses up every day is from digesting food. So this is why intermittent fasting is so beneficial. Even if you just do a half day fast every day, you give your body a chance to get away from having to digest food, and your body can focus on other things. So you'll notice that you'll recover better from your workouts. You'll have more energy. Your body will be able to repair from nagging injuries. All that stuff, you know, a lot of these injuries that you have, you'll start noticing they start healing. Another big one too, which has related to fat loss, is that when you get into fasting, you can do more flexible dieting. Because when you're fasting, you turn your body into being more insulin sensitive versus insulin resistant. So basically, when you eat something, it doesn't get stored as fat as easy, and that's in a normal situation. So your body tends to, you know, not, you can kind of eat more cheat meals, basically, and your body won't punish you. Your body won't store it as fat. Like, you hear stories of fat people, they'll eat healthy. They'll have one cheat meal, and they'll gain like 3 or 4 pounds. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Well, it's because they're so fucking insulin resistant that anything they eat just gets stored as fat. So you get your body into an insulin sensitive mode, and you'll actually notice that you won't store fat from eating food. That's why you see a lot of these people eat 4,000 or 5,000 calories and they don't get fat. That's one of the reasons. You know, they're very active. They have strong metabolisms, but they're also insulin sensitive. So that's, you know, those are the health benefits, guys. There's a lot of health benefits. So in our next episodes, you know, I want to get into, you know, the stuff Matt went through of, you know, what types of fasts you can do. But if, you know, again, the handbook is out there, guys. It's on Amazon. You can go in there and buy it. Just click my signature, Steve Smee, on our forum, evolutionary.org or Elite Fitness, and you'll be able to get a direct link to it. But, you know, I really, you know, think it's really a good idea to look into fasting and start utilizing it to help your goals, your health goals, your fat loss goals, everything. So, any final words, Matt, before we close up?
Yeah, just quickly, I mean, all those goals, it'll also help with muscle building if you do it right. So don't think it's something, if you're trying to gain muscle, that you can't do. You certainly can do it. There's different ways you can do it to actually build muscle while, you know, doing fasting as part of your routine. And we'll get into that in a lot more detail on the next show when we go through everything too.
Evolution.org, guys. Thanks for listening to Raw. We will talk to you guys next time. Have a good night.